Balayiri, agus Vurgate Faltish Tachri Tachri Kaylee. You're very welcome to Kaylee House, and on tonight's programme, we celebrate the launch of the Leo Rousham Collection of Irish Music, a book of 428, yes, 428 reels and jigs, published by Waltons and launched some months ago at Coltis headquarters in Monkstown in County Dublin. There were many people there on the night, including Leo's daughter, Helena, Leo's great friend, Paddy McIlvenny, a former pupil of the master Illan Piper, Joe McKenna, and Kevin Rousham, grandson, and the man who carries on the Rousham tradition. We'll hear from them all during tonight's Kaylee House, but first, the trip to Bantry and the coming of spring from fiddler Lorraine Hickey, guitarist Mark Lycett, and piper Kevin Rousham. Couple of Paddy O'Brien tunes there, The Trip to Bantry and The Coming of Spring, with Lorraine Hickey on the fiddle, Mark Lycett on guitar, and Kevin Rousham on the Illan pipes. That's from a CD called The Rousham Tradition. We'll meet Kevin a little later on the programme. We'll also be talking to Joe McKenna, who studied piping with Leo Rousham. This is Joe, though, on the low whistle here, playing Eileen Curran and Tommy Peoples. Thank you. abrupt end there from Joe McKenna with Eileen Curran and Tommy Peoples. A lovely version of those tunes, I must say. That's from Joe's CD, The Irish Low Whistle. And from pupil to master, this is Leo Rousham with a couple of tunes that would be very, very familiar, I would say, to Bothyband fans. See if you can spot them. The Kerry Jig and the Ballantore Fancy from Leo Rousham. The 1966 Cladda CD, The King of the Pipers, that was indeed the King of the Pipers, Leo Rousham. You're listening to Cayley House on RTE Radio 1, and the Leo Rousham collection of Irish music was launched some months ago at Cultúrlan na hÉireann. We were there and we met some of the guests. I spoke first to founder of Coltas Cultúrlan and longtime friend of Leo Rousham, Paddy McIlvenny. I asked Paddy if he remembered the first time he met Leo.
Well, the first time I met him, of course, was when I come to Dublin. I come to Dublin in 1938, and the first place I went was to the Pipers Club, which was over in Mulder Street at that stage. And the first man I went to meet was Leo Rousham, because I had known him, listening to him, he's piping, and from that day, myself and Leo. We met every Monday night for years. He was the chairman at committee meetings in the place. And we used to meet every Monday night, that time. And he'd be there of a Saturday night on the teaching then of a Saturday night.
What kind of an individual was he?
Lovely man. He was a gentleman. Leo was a gentleman. And his brother Tom was more or less the same. The Rousham were lovely people. He was a gentleman. I never heard him ever making any bad comments about musicians or pipers or none of that, no. Everybody was great. I never heard him making the wrong word about anybody playing pipers.
You also get the impression that he was very dedicated.
Oh, he was. Of course he was. So my God Almighty, it's an awful job of teaching the pipes. Teaching any instrument, but teaching pipes is a tough job. And he didn't nearly have to be teaching, because he had plenty of work making them himself. Still, he always had all the time to come over and teach. he believed in teaching the young people as well.
And what about as a player then?
Ah, well, sure, he was one of the greats. He was one of the greats. He was. No doubt about that. He was. Oh, he was great. If you played the pipes, and he didn't need any guitars or nothing along him, because he was full command of the full instrument. He played the regulators, the lot. That's what pipes about.
Did you ever travel around much with him? Did you ever see how people reacted to him? Was he a famous man?
Oh, gee, he was, of course. Of course he was a famous man. So, my God, he could go to a concert, he would fill the place with... He was very, 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 very respected man. Very respected for his music.
What's your favourite memory of him? Any story about him?
I have, but I won't tell
go
it.
Go on, tell it.
No. No.
Tell us your second favourite one, then.
No. We had... I remember it. I remember myself and Siri, Jim Siri, and myself. Jim and myself went out to help him to build up his little workshop. When he was, and we went over this Sunday anyhow, and we went up to Belton's, and the three of us were fairly well saddled. And before we left, the two of us, we gave Leo the pledge. He said, no way would he to take drink anymore. And he kept it. I think we were as good as his father, Matty.
Helena Rossum, I noticed there's a great sense of pride about the place tonight, because at long last the Leo Rossum collection of Irish music has been published, and I suppose particular pride for yourself.
Yes, indeed, Ciarán. Well, this is only the first of many collections, hopefully, of my father's music. This is 428 reels and jigs. And people might say, why only reels and jigs? Well, it's just simply because when he, on his arrival home from the School of Music and Piper's Club, when he taught there 4 evenings a week, he would sit down at the table before supper writing music, and he'd write reels and jigs. So he has actually written an awful lot of hornpipes and things like that also, but we hope to put those into another edition. So I just thought in this first one, in order for it to be of concise length and not be too uncomfortable putting the music stand, which is too difficult, we just went for the first lot, which are reels and jigs, but hopefully we'll have the rest in the near future.
It's a beautiful production, I must say. I'm intrigued about the family. There's an amazing tradition in the Rowson family. Were you always aware of the strength of that tradition?
Oh, very much so indeed. I mean, I was the first sound I heard was my father tuning pipes for people in the workshop from the back of the house. I mean, I just lived morning and night listening to music. My grandfather, William Rowson, who started up the piping business in Harles Cross, in a workshop at the back of the house in Harles Cross, his father before him, Samuel Rowson, it is said that perhaps even somebody before him, although we're not totally sure, which would mean that Kevin, my nephew at the moment, is at least the fifth generation to play the pipes. I have to say now, somebody asked me, was it a male thing in the family? Well, not really, because I actually played the pipes myself. But as soon as my children came on the scene, it was like difficult peeling an apple or an orange, being in harness and the pipes. So I'm a bit lazy. I took to the whistle and tend to play that more now.
Did you know your grandfather?
Unfortunately, no. I never met my grandfather, but he died at a very young age, at the age of 55, in the year 1925. And it's an amazing thing, because he, like my father, was totally dedicated to the making and teaching of the pipes. Because when he became ill in 1955, he was being brought by ambulance into the hospice in Harles Cross, which was located near his home. And he called my father over, even at that stage, as he was being put into the ambulance, to ask him, was there anything else he needed to know about pipes? Nothing else mattered to him. So, I mean, that personifies the type of person and the total devotion he had to the instrument. And my father was exactly the same.
Tell us about your home life. How many were in the family? Sisters and brothers.
My sisters and brothers, first of all. Liam and Leon, unfortunately, are both deceased. And my sister Olivia, she lives in Skerries. She's my twin. And she teaches piano in Skerries, and we're both married to brothers, nephews of Sean Reid of Venice.
Now, when you were growing up, I'm trying to kind of get a sense of what the household was like for ye as kids growing up. What was it like there? Were the people constantly calling for pipes or for tuition, or, you know, how did your mother cope with it all?
Well, it was an amazing house, because I always remember being happy all the time. There were no sad moments. My father in the morning would just go into the workshop and make the pipes, and during that time, till about 3 o'clock, when he went out to the School of Music, people would be coming non-stop into the house looking for a pairs, or have you got this tune written out, or weren't so many people ringing up, and obviously no mobile phones in those days, but he seemed to have time for them all. And then we had lots of callers, like people like Willie Clancy, Andy Conroy, they'd all come, and of course my father would get completely involved in what they wanted. He would sit down, put the pipes on, and in the end they'd just all be playing in the sitting room at home. We'd all sorts of people come to the house, Brendan B and Margaret Barry and Gareth Brown, who formed Clatter Records. Gareth brought many interesting people to the house, and we really had a superb upbringing in the sense that it was so congenial and steeped in music at all times. Of course, my mother was a primary school teacher.
Yes. How did she cope?
Amazingly well. She was a disciplinarian of the family, and she used to kind of chase us up to bed and not let us loiter around too long listening to the music. But she was very receptive to all these people that came, and she really appreciated the true skills and the true value my father was to the music world, because she never ever didn't accommodate people who came. Like, everybody was so amazed, but she herself was a primary school teacher, and she would come in from school sort of tired at about 3 o'clock, and there'd be all sorts of notes and things to do and so forth, and then she'd have five bags to make for somebody's practice set. She used to make the bags up on the machine. By that I mean the covers for the bags. The bags themselves, of course, were made by my father in the workshop, and a very fond memory is of playing out in the yard and all of a sudden he'd open the window and he'd put out a little rubber ball, and that would be the residue from the actual solution he used to use to make the bags. He'd be rubbing his hands, and it'd form into a little rubber ball, and whoever caught the ball first would have it.
Beautiful memory, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic altogether, yeah. And other things like billiard balls. There were quite a few of those around the house. I mentioned this to somebody earlier. They were made out of ivory. And you used to cut them up and use them for ornamentation on the chanter top and the base of the drones. So it was great fun. He was, of course, a particular expert at reed making. He used a cutthroat razor. And just to see him doing it, and, I mean, you'd just be absolutely afraid of your life that his thumb was going to go off. But never once injured himself in any way with the cutthroat razor. Very steady hand.
So as a father, I take it he was very warm, was he?
He's absolutely amazing. Amazing. Never, ever a cross word. So calm.
He was famous then because he played on radio. How did other people react to you?
Well, everybody. In fact, some of them are here tonight at the book launch here in the Lumps Cold Turlin. It's a kind of... They respected a lot what he did. And it's just the sheer amount of work that the man did. Everybody realised and saw that. And as I'm getting older and older, I just find it unbelievable that any one person could cope with the volume of work and the diversity of the work he did. I mean, I have a large archive in which there is all sorts of things, from bill heads for practice sets for £5 and reeds for 1 and 6 pence, to the importation and duty forms for large consignments of black ebony from Africa via London shippers. Letters from people all over the world asking him for things, not alone pipes, but tunes. He would reply to every single one of those. Every single one.
What's your favourite tune that he recorded?
Well, I think by far the King of the Pipers record, that CD, Clatter Records, CC1, is an amazing CD. All of the tunes on it. I mean, I couldn't say, well, you can't really compare a slow air with a jig or a hornpipe anyway, but I suppose in some magical way, the way he plays the cooler for me is amazing.
Thank you.
The Coolin from the King of the Pipers CD, released by Claddagh Records in 1966. Before that, Helena Rousham with some lovely memories of her father, her youth and life at the Rousham home. We met Helena at the launch of the Leo Rousham collection in a very busy Kultúrland na hÉireann. We also met one of Leo's former pupils, Joe McKenna. Joe told us about some of his experiences with Leo.
Well, I'm very fortunate to have learned from Leo, but at the same time we were born in Thomas Street, six doors away from the Pipers Club, and my father was a committee member there and up every Saturday. But for me, Leo, I mean, everybody has said a lot of things about Leo, and looking back on Leo, like, he was probably the first wise man I ever met, you know, and I loved going up. I just looked, you know, like, sometimes you don't want to learn music, but I mean, a lot of people don't want to get to practice or whatever. I loved to see Leo Rousham every Saturday. Like, I just actually loved. And there was a bus stop outside our door. We had a sweet shop in Thomas Street. And, like, he was very professional. So he put on his thing with the teaching and stuff like that. But he actually used to, you know, the bar off a bus. I used to see him swing with the pipes and then run, and the bus never used to stop, you know. And he'd jump off with the pipes and jump for it. And I thought this was the most brilliant thing I ever saw any teacher could do, you know. So I loved him. I actually loved him, you know.
Okay, let's just talk about the three aspects you mentioned there about him. As a piper, as a teacher, and as a pipe maker. Yeah. Describe him as a piper.
Well, the thing about Leo was that he was a piping entertainer. He entertained people. And he brought, you know, he knew how to bring joy to people, you know, to make them. It wasn't just serious piping. Like, he wasn't in that mold where, you know, you listen to me and this is serious piping. He actually played the pipes to make you happy, and that was his focus on, like. And he, no matter what, he'd play serious piping, then he'd go off and play something that would make you laugh, like, you know, some simple tune, and he'd do tricks on the regulators, you know. He loved harmonies, and he loved the sound of three or four pipes. Now, at that time, to get them all in tune was like any instrument, so a bit scratchy, but he had, of course, he made them. And when we were up in the top room in Pipers Club, he used to, at the end of the lessons, he'd get four or five, as Peter Brown would be there, and the McKeown's would be there, and he'd taught us about four or five tunes that he'd put the harmonies to, and one of them was the Old Foggy Dew he had harmonies to, and Drops of Brandy he would have, you know, and he'd get us all going, and he'd play the harmony, and then the regulators gone, and the drones, and to be in the small room with that kind of sound, like, was something, really, and he knew it was something else, and, like, he was tremendously wise, and he knew he was involved in something huge, like. He was a showman, but he, as far as I'm concerned, he was the greatest piper ever lived, and, yeah, ever. And there's not one technique on the pipes that he didn't do or didn't record. If you listen carefully to the music, he chose not to do it. And the great thing about him, he just, going back to what I was saying about the pioneer, he was just above everything, you know, above all that, you know. In himself, he was above a lot of things. Like, when he wrote out the music, you know, I remember one night writing a piece of music, and the first part he says, "You see the end of that, that's the way I play it. Now I'm going to write that, and the top of that, I'm going to write, this is the way Willie Clancy plays it. He finished off tune. I think the way he does it is better." You know, and that'll tell you how he was, you know. Unbelievable, you know, wide person, you know. And at that time, people were insisting on you come from the Seamus Ennis School or the Rousham School of Piping or the Willie Clancy School of Piping. And he loved the fact that you would jump in and out of that stuff, you know.
And his pipes then, his pipe making, what were they like? I mean, are they revered as instruments?
His own pipes, everybody's copying them still. Just to mention a few of the recordings that you might have, all over the Chieftains, Paddy Maloney, Liam O'Flynn, Paddy Keenan, all the early recordings of modern, say, 70s, 80s, that you would hear the sound, you know, and even in Davis Palan, a copy of Rousham Chanters. I play a copy of a D chanter of his. And even nowadays, I mean, they're revered. A Rousham Chanter now is the thing. It's not, and even copying it is not good enough anymore. The magic, you see, his magic, he brought the magic into the actual making of the pipes as well.
And finally, Joe McKenna. If I was to ask you about his recordings, if I was asking you to pick one of his recordings, what's your favourite recording of his music?
I like them all, but I think like the Lament for the Death of Steger Wallace was one of I always was just huge big tune, you know, and he was command of the pipes and no hurry on it, you know, and the whole emotion that he had, you know, because of course I remember him being in the room beside him, and this drones filling up a big room and regulators and harmonies and sound of the pipes and the smell of the pipes, even, you know, all the beeswax and all that kind of thing. He just somehow knew he was bringing you into another world, like.
Kevin Rowson, we've spoken to members of the Rowson family tonight. We've met some pupils of Leo Rowson, and by the name Rowson, of course, you're one of the great Rowson family. You are, I believe, the fifth, at least, in a line of pipers. It must be a cross to bear for you, is it? Do you feel the weight of the tradition on your shoulders?
Well, I suppose sometimes in my life I've thought of it as that, but in recent years, I suppose I've really start enjoying it as I become more of an accomplished player, and I'm more confident in myself as a musician, and I'm more mature, I suppose. I'm starting to enjoy the benefits of and the honour of being the fifth generation. And I suppose my father Leon would have been more so in the shadow of Leo, music being Leo's full time occupation, and there was music in the house all the time. But my father was a secondary school teacher and played part time, so there wasn't as much when we were growing up. You know, I remember pupils coming down to learn off my father, you know, when I was 6 or 7, and you know, I used to sit in some of the classes. I took some classes in the College of Music with my father as well. You know, I picked a lot of off records myself, and I was in the RTM band as well, played the clarinet and saxophone there. But I was never forced into learning.
So you drifted back to the pipes?
I drifted, yeah, just like I'm doing here.
What about your grandfather? Did you know him?
I was 7 when he died.
Right.
But I have a few very vivid memories of him, you know. And but I suppose I didn't know him as a person. But I feel as though I do know him because of the many reminiscences that people have shared with me over the years.
Are you surprised at the way people regard him? He's probably one of the highest regarded people ever to play traditional music, let alone the pipes.
It never ceases to amaze me, yeah. To build up a picture of a person that people have so much regard for, people almost, you know, tell me all the time, you know, how they used to cross the fields and to hear him playing every week on the radio, and that was the highlight of their week. And you know, people saying, you know, when they heard of his death, you know, that they didn't know him, but they actually were actually breaking down crying, you know, and like they had that much affection for him. And you know, it sort of, you know, for a while I just really didn't take it in, but when so many different people from different walks of life tell you, it starts to sink in that he was, you know, he was really that highly regarded, you know, amongst musicians, lay people, you know, and people who are just followers of traditional music, and especially pipers.
Now, you travel a bit playing yourself. Do you come across his sets of pipes, or where's the strangest place you come across a set of his pipes?
Usually, I hear of so many sets in attics that people won't part with, you know, and they're rotting away, you know, but people have so much sentimental value and whatever value, but I've heard of an awful lot of sets that went over to America. Actually, I heard of a set of pipes made by Leo's father, Willie Rosen. I went over, and a friend of mine was restoring them over, a friend of mine in Vermont, Benedict Kohler. And they were virtually untouched. When he opened them, there was about 20-page instructions of how to play this instrument, handwritten. And it just knocked me back for a while. It must have taken him about a day or two to write this out. And after making a set of pipes with no electricity on a treadle lathe, you know, taking whatever, a month, 2 months, and then to sit down and write this tutor out, it was amazing, you know. So,
do you make pipes yourself, or are you involved in that side of it?
I took a career break from my present job to really catch up on my piping, you know, on my music heritage. I spent a couple of years over in London and the College of Furniture learning to make woodwind instruments, and I learned a lot of skills there which I don't actually use them. I made a couple of practice sets, a couple of half sets in my time, but it's the sort of thing that you'd want to be doing full time to gain the level of perfection that I would be happy with, you know. So maybe in retirement or
so we might see the Rosen production line, yeah, starting up again.
Sometime. Well, don't watch this space.
And then what about your playing? Have you based that on your family's style, or are you influenced by other musicians?
This is was part of the musical, I suddenly maturing or whatever, was initially when I started off playing, I was totally Leo Leon, and then I used to try and emulate their regulator style, and then as I listened to other players, I sort of denied that I was enjoying listening to other players, and all of a sudden I said, you know, I'm playing the way I want to play, and that's it, you know, so that's what I do now. So it's take it or leave it from now.
I've got to ask you, I've asked some other people tonight, of Leo's recordings, would you pick a favourite one?
Old 78s. It's earlier stuff. It's really the music in it was fantastic.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I look forward to the first set of pipes rolling off that production line.
Okay, well, as I said before, don't watch this space.
Primrose Lass and the Ivy Leaf there, one of the old 78 recordings of Leo Rowson. Now, we heard some of Leo's music from the King of the Pipers CD, which was launched by Claddagh Records in 1966. Well, a little gem from the archive here, probably the first reference to that recording on RTE Radio when Garrett De Bruin spoke to presenter Carol Jones.
Christmas shoppers can this week add the country's newest disc to their present lists. It's just out today, an LP record of Leo Rowson, King of the Pipers, pressed for a new Irish record company, Claddagh Records. I have here in the studio with me now Garrett Brown, a director of the company. And Garrett, I'd like to ask you first, what was behind the foundation of this company?
Well, we felt there was a serious need for more records of Irish interest, and in particular for those of traditional Irish music.
I know that you yourself are very deeply interested in traditional music. Do you feel a sort of sacred trust to push it?
Well, I feel that there haven't been really enough records for anybody who wanted them, and that it was simply practically a matter of necessity.
Yes. Well, what about other discs for your new company?
Well, I hope we're going to have a large number, but we have four planned, which include Brendan Behan, Margaret Barry and Michael Gorman and Dolly McMahona.
How are you going to bring out your next one? Will you wait for the profits for this to come in before you go on to the next?
That's precisely what we will do, yes, although the second one is well underway already.
Yes, yes, but basically it's a question of one disc paying for two next. More and then for, yes, this kind of thing. Well, finally, I'd like to say a word about your very colourful record cover. What's its significance?
Well, it's a picture of Leo Rosen playing the fox chase for Lady Molly Cusack-Smith, otherwise known as Molly O'Rourke, who is the master of the Birmingham and North Galway foxhounds.
I see. Well, I think that gives us a nice out. What better way than to listen to Leo Rosen playing the fox chase?
Thank you.
The Fox Chase from Leo Rousham. And that's almost it for Cayley House. I hope you enjoyed the programme. My thanks to everyone who took part. We're going to leave you now with another former pupil of Leo Rousham's, Liam O'Flynn, and a selection of reels, O'Rourke's, The Merry Sisters and Cornel Fraser. It's from Liam's CD, The Given Note, and I'll read the note that accompanies this particular selection. Just says, "These three reels take me back to my time as a pupil of Leo Rousham. As well as being my first pipes teacher, Leo made my first practice set of pipes, and since then I have always played a Rousham set of pipes. So in fact, Leo has been literally part of my music making from the beginning. I remember him with great affection and owe him a very great debt of gratitude." The words of Liam O'Flynn, and I'm sure he speaks for many. We're going to leave you now with the music of Liam O'Flynn from producer Peter Brown and from me, Kieran Hanrahan. Until next time on Cayley House, Slán go fóill.